Ooh, for authors? Yeah, just do it. Just do it. I talked to so many authors who are thinking about doing it and wanna do it and might do it. Just do it, man. Just write a book. It is that easy. You don't have to have a publisher. You don't have to have an agent. You don't have to decide whether or not you want to self-publish or traditionally publish or get an agent or get a publisher. You got to write a book first. You just sit down. The way you write a book is you sit down and you write a book.
Hey, friend. So excited for this Portfolio Career Podcast episode with Olive Persimmon. You may remember Olive as being a guest on the show. She was, I had the honor of interviewing her on guest number 9. It's one of those things I love about guests and friends on the show is like they're always doing new projects. And I think I've heard from some of you of how great it's been to listen to prior episodes and guests a second time. So excited to share this episode with Olive for you. At the time, she was working on a book and she's published it. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about advice for authors. She also is a public speaking coach. And we talk about that world, that industry, that sector. And another thing that Olive is really good at is setting goals and being open about them. She has 2 new goals for 2020 that you'll hear about here. And she talks about why she decides to openly share them. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Olive. So Olive, if we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
I would say, hello, my name is Olive Persimmon. That's what I would say. And then I would stick out my hand for a handshake. I don't know.
I thought you were going to say, stick out your hand for money.
I mean, sure. If anyone listening wants to Venmo me money, it's olive-persimmon at venmo.com. I mean, at Venmo app.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much, Olive, for coming back on the show. So last time when we chatted and other chats that we've had, you know, around that time you were launching your book.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say also you had the most amazing book launch party.
Thank you.
Talk to me about, this is your second book. So talk to me a little bit about like what it was like launching the second book. And I think that could be just a good place to start.
Yeah, it was interesting because this book was a little different. I did it like the quote unquote right way, quote unquote. So I have like an agent and a publisher and an audio book and your Kindle book. And so in some ways it feels like a big deal. And in some ways, literally nothing in your life changes. it was amazing. Like the first time I walked into Barnes & Noble and I saw like a bunch of my books on the table, I was like, oh my God, I made it, you know? And you're so happy and everybody's like celebrating. And also like nothing else in your life really changes, you know, in some ways. But so that was a cool experience. It's been an interesting journey. I'm having like an interesting relationship with the publishing industry. I have thoughts on that in general.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say overall, creating a piece of art from start to finish, however you do it, and then birthing it into the world, always feels good if you're an artist. Like, that's always going to feel good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned an audiobook. So some of my listeners are podcasters as well. You know, they're creators, as you know, we were just talking about. Maybe talk to us about why you decided to also create the audiobook.
Yeah, I didn't decide. Basically, what happened was there's this, the way the audiobooks work in terms of buying from the publisher. So your book comes out with a publisher. So I have a publisher and I have a distributor. My publisher is a company called Skyhorse. The distributor is a company called Simon & Schuster. And so one of those companies is in charge of making sure you have content, you have a book, you have Kindle. Simon & Schuster is in charge of distributing it. That means it gets into bookstores. They get it out to retailers. Retailers means like Target, Walmart. And the way the audiobook works, that's a totally different company. And so what they do is they buy the rights to your book. So I worked with a company called Brilliance, which is a part of Amazon. They bought the rights to the audiobook. They flew me out to Michigan. We go out to Michigan. You record it. They pay you to record it, which is awesome. And then it's actually really cool because you make a lot more money on an audiobook than anything else, actually. So on the audiobook, I make about 50% of all profits, which is pretty good because that company bought the rights. So they get 50%, I get 50%. In the publishing industry, on average, a writer gets either 12 or 15%. It's a huge difference.
Of the book, it's 12 to 15%?
Yeah. Which is nuts. Like, you see how much money they make. Like, I get a royalty check, and you see how much money they make, and you see how much money you make. And you're just like, should have become an accountant. But yeah, if anybody wants to record an audiobook. So I got very lucky, which was... Nothing about this process was lucky for me up until this point. I tried to get, getting an agent, I had to request 145 agents. I think I said that on a podcast number 9. Getting a publisher, we were rejected by tons of publishers. Nothing fell in my lap. Nothing fell in my lap. I worked really, really freaking hard to make this happen, except for the audiobook. It was like God's little gift to me for persevering so much. So a man at the company, he just saw the description of the book. He really liked the description of the book. He chatted with me. He liked me, and they bought the rights.
Okay. And so then, if you do another book, do you think you'd go the publisher route again?
Oh, that's such a tricky question. And I have a ton of friends who are writers too, and we have this conversation all the time. If you have the platform, that means if you have people who know of your work and they want to know of your work and you already have the credibility of having a publisher, a lot of times it makes more sense to self-publish simply because you make a way larger profit margin, way larger. If you haven't had a publisher, there is a certain level of credibility that comes with having a publisher, mm-hmm. and an agent, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it would depend for me. It would depend on distribution. If I could get widespread distribution, maybe I would do it traditionally. It might make sense to self-publish as well. Mm-hmm. I haven't quite decided yet.
Okay. All right. And then, we were talking about goals and, I know you got two goals for this year, and one is not a book. One is TV show.
Yeah.
Maybe let's talk about that one. You know, how do you think about like a TV show for, you know, because I think a lot about like catalyst events or creation events, like creating a podcast, writing a book, audiobook, you know, giving a TED talk, things like that, that can really like accelerate your career. A TV show, I think, is definitely another one of those. So I'd love to hear your thoughts as like why you were interested in pursuing that.
Yeah, I think this process with the publishing industry, I've kind of become disillusioned by it a little bit because it's so much work. They take basically all your money and they don't really help you in a lot of ways unless you're like Stephen King, right? So like you're still in charge of basically marketing it. You're in charge of a lot of things that have to do with your book. With TV, what really excited me was your writing. But you're also thinking about the performance. So, you know, I have a background in public speaking. Your listeners won't know that, but I have a background in public speaking. I'm obsessed with public speaking. I love it. With TV, I get to combine two things that I love. I get to write, and I get to write comedy. But you're also thinking about, like, how are people going to deliver this? How is it going to come across? And that's exciting. It's really exciting. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe I'll write this and become disillusioned with the TV industry. I don't know. Maybe I'll become an accountant after all, but I think it was just time to try something a little different. I'm working on a third novel, but I'm doing it more casually than writing the TV pilot.
Okay. And then you mentioned public speaking.
Yeah.
We also know some people that are interested in being public speakers.
Yeah.
I know that you get asked this question often of how do I give a public speech, or, you know, how do I improve my speaking? Any thoughts on that? Of like, is it training? Is it just going to Toastmasters? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. The best thing you can do to become a better public speaker is exposure therapy, meaning the more you do it, the better you're going to become. That's just fact. Second thing is learn how to calm your body. people hate public speaking typically because their body is going into some sort of fight or flight. That means that your brain is releasing a lot of adrenaline, a lot of cortisol, and you're having symptoms, visible symptoms of that. So people hate public speaking because they're like, my face turns red and I black out and I get sweaty and my knees knock. And then they feel like everyone can see that and that's embarrassing. And the truth is, once you learn how to calm your body, you're going to reduce those symptoms. You can learn how to reduce. Sometimes you're still, I still have symptoms sometimes to this day. I still turn red, but I've learned how to manage that. And once you manage it, the symptoms start to reduce. And then it's less scary to be in front of an audience. The easiest way to learn how to calm your body is exposure therapy, which just means you got to start getting in front of audiences. The easiest way to do that is by joining a Toastmasters. What I will say about Toastmasters is I was a Toastmaster for 6 years. I've been a professional communication trainer for 7 years. And the Toastmasters gives you the opportunity to practice, but it's not a class and you're not going to get professional feedback. So I would say take a class. Learn how to do it. Learn tips for managing your body. Learn tips for how to gesture in a way that looks good. And then go to a Toastmasters to practice. But don't go to a Toastmasters expecting that you're getting professional training, because you're not. Mm-hmm.
How have you seen people become successful about like giving paid public speeches or paid speeches towards organizations? How have you seen people be able to go from like, you know, exposure therapy to then being known as an expert in giving inspiring, dynamic talks?
Yeah. Step one, become a good speaker. So you have to become a good speaker. Step two, figure out what you're going to talk about. So most speakers that get hired are specialized in an area of interest. So it could be productivity. It could be, you know, leadership, it could be motivation. But if you're just like, I can talk about absolutely anything, it makes it a lot harder for companies to hire you. So once you specialize, you need some videos of you actually speaking. So we call that, a demo reel of sorts. This doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to pay someone to do it. You just need a few nice looking videos of you speaking. And then you do it the same way anybody does sales of anything. You just pitch yourself. So the most successful speakers that I know have just pitched themselves to companies. A lot of companies look for speakers. And so they just say like, oh, I'm this speaker. Like, you can check out my videos here. And then once you get hired by one company, you're like, oh, I gave a speech at blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so but first you got to start. Mm-hmm. You got to become a good speaker. And a lot of the good speakers that I know became good speakers by speaking anywhere anyone would have them for free.
And the person that people pitch to, who's that person typically at a company? Let's say Google. You know, is it a, you know, how would somebody know who to reach out to?
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on the company. In a lot of companies, there's like a learning and development department that does training, sometimes speeches. It depends on kind of if that's part of the learning arm. So like you could Google learning and development manager at Google. A lot of speakers are hired by special interest groups in different companies. So there might be an interest group that's like diversity inclusion. Or one time I taught a training at, was held by the Asian Inclusion Network. So it was for people at the company who were Asian. They came together every week and they wanted to do a public speaking training. I taught a training once at a financial company for their women's group. They had a group for like female bankers. So a lot of these companies have specialized groups, and a lot of times they're the ones who bring in speakers.
Mm-hmm. And then is the, call it the sales cycle, can it be like in a couple of weeks or is it usually a couple of months? Like from a...
Oh God, no. I would say it's a long sales process. From my own experience, yeah. I guess if you get towards the end of the fiscal year and they like have extra money in their budget, it might go really quickly. I don't know as much for speaking. I do mostly training at companies, and that's a long sell.
6 months?
Yeah, I'd say so. Unless they're like desperate for the training.
Mm-hmm. That's long.
It's long. Yeah. I don't do biz dev anymore. I don't do business development anymore. I used to do it, but now I work for a training company where I was just like, I don't want to do business development. I want to show up, I train, I leave. And that's, I like that. So I'm not doing client management. I'm not doing client support. I design the curriculum. So I work with the client a lot of times to design the curriculum that's specialized for the people. But yeah, I'm not doing business development. And I haven't, in a long time, I haven't gone in and given like straight up talk. Usually it's some sort of like workshop or like lecture with exercises.
You see that as a trend? I think that seems like a trend.
Yeah, I think they both exist. I think you could certainly be a straight up speaker where you just go in. There are plenty of people who go in and they just give a talk. But you might get hired by someone a little different who's doing looking for like a training.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So speaking, going back to the TV show. And we've been talking about goals and, yeah. and stuff. And I think that you've done an amazing... I've been really inspired about how open you are about your goals. And it's inspired me and it's inspired a lot of other people.
Thanks.
I'd love to hear just kind of like your thought process on being so open about your goals. And for people that are listening, that's like your Facebook posts, which, by the way, are just incredible in general.
Thanks.
But also, yeah, I think, you know, goals and trying to have more and more people aware of your goals to then help you achieve them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm open about a lot of stuff for different reasons. This topic in particular, it boils down to sheer accountability. In my mind, the more people I tell, the more accountability I have for maintaining those goals. Like I told everyone at my job knows, my other goal is I'm trying to get a six pack. And I told everyone at my job. And because I told them, like, if I'm sitting there eating a cookie, I know they know, you know, that I'm not working towards my goal. And I'm very motivated by that embarrassment of like not meeting the goal when I've been so public about it. So I just really did it as I know what motivates me and I want to be successful at this. So I really wanted to set myself up with systems that were going to support my success. For me, that means accountability, individual accountability. So I also have, for the six-pack one, I have every Monday, we do like measurements with two friends and we take photos. So we take photos from the front and the side and we do measurements and weigh-ins. I have a workout partner that I work out with. And then I just told freaking everybody. And it's just helpful. It's helpful too because they know when they're offering, when somebody brought in cupcakes at work the other day and they didn't offer one to me because I was like, I'm off sugar. Oh, I'm going to bet to be off sugar. I'm off sugar and alcohol. I just know what works for me and it's accountability. So the more open you are with your goals, I think the more accountable you are. Though I did read somebody's Facebook post the other day and they were like, keep your head down, don't tell anyone and just do it. And maybe that works for some people. I'm not disciplined enough. Like I will bail on myself. Like if I don't tell anybody, I'm like, well, no one knows. I can just eat this cupcake. It's fine. I need that support system. Like it's just who I am as a person.
And do you get a lot of people then that then follow up on those posts about, let's say, goals?
You mean like ask me about it?
Yeah, like let's just say, yeah, like next time, you know, see somebody out, do people come and ask you, hey, you know, how's that goal come along? Or is it, do you think it's a lot more of like just airing it out so publicly that there is an inherent kind of social pressure? Or do you have a bunch of people follow up? Yeah,
I think it's both. I do have the social pressure, but I think it also helps with my friends, like, the other day, a bunch of my friends went out for dinner and it was like a restaurant. It was a dinner in a bar and it was a restaurant where I couldn't really order anything on the menu. So I just left with another friend and went and got dinner. And when I came back, everybody was like, where did you go? And I was like, oh, I had to get food I could eat. And they were totally fine about it because they knew that this was a goal of mine. You know, so it really helps when people are kind of in on it because then they're not showing up to your house with like, hey, I baked you a dozen cookies or like, you know, pushing you to go get Thai food. They understand that this is something that I really want and they're really supportive in it.
And with the work side, did you, I don't know, did they see the Facebook post or do you send around an email to the team and say, hey, y'all, here's my goals for the year? I'm always curious, especially something that has a career-oriented goal that's like external from the company. I'm curious about that kind of communication of like, I love working here, but by the way, I'm working on a TV show, you know, just.
This is my day job. So I have a part-time day job that helps with my health insurance and helps me pay my rent. And we're a small team. We have 7 people on our team. So you're just going to talk about stuff. So they knew that half of them read my second book. Most of them read my second book. My boss read my second book. We talk about funny stuff all the time. The 6-pack goal was very easy. I just told them like straight up. I told everybody, it's like all over my desk, like 6-pack, 6-pack. The TV show, I think I told like 3 of my colleagues just because it came up in conversation. I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna work on a TV show. And they were really supportive. They were like, that makes sense. You should absolutely do that. I think in general, I can only speak from my own corporate experience, people want to support people with big goals. Mm. They want to support artists. And it's only petty assholes who are going to be like, you're working on something outside of here. Like, this should be your life. Like, that's only from like insecure people. And I've been lucky enough that I haven't had to work with a lot of those people. In general, every company I've worked for knows that I make art. They know that I write. They know that I have books about sex in the world. And they've been very, very supportive.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we talked about some of the key things here. So that's good that you encourage more people to be more open about their goals in their corporate life too.
I mean, I think this is one of those questions that it's like one size doesn't fit all. Yeah. Like, be discerning about it. You know, if you know your colleagues are going to come down on you for, and the truth is like, I don't walk in on day one and like, I wrote a book about sex, you know, but the more you get to know people, it comes up. I found it's actually much harder to keep it private because a lot of times I'd be really excited about it and I have tried to keep it private. But if you're actually connecting with your colleagues and they're your friends, they're kind of like, you're weird. You don't share stories. You don't tell us like what's going on in your life. And that almost becomes weirder, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost,
they can sense it.
Yeah. It's almost easier to be like, you know, I wrote a book and I'm so excited and it's coming out and they cheer you on. And, you know, they got me a card for my book launch. My boss got me a card the day my book was coming out. Like, that's so amazing. You know? I really do think people support people with big dreams. Unless you're like really insecure and petty, most people want to see artists make it.
I love this. Supporting people with big dreams.
So I mean, don't you feel that way? Like, you hear somebody wants to start their own business. Like, isn't your first thought like, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I think that's a lot of people.
I like supporting anybody that is doing something on their own. Whether that's starting their own company, starting a podcast, writing a book, anybody that, I don't want to say has the audacity, but just anybody that has the courage, like, I want to support them for it because that is cool. That shows initiative, that shows leadership, it shows, you know, like that they're trying to make something happen and not be, you know, just going through the motions. So those are, you know, call it career nomads, call it however you want to call it, but people that are just, you know, doing their own stuff while also, hey, you know, trying to make a living here in New York City. But
yeah,
I definitely want to, I want to support those people.
I think that's most people. I think people think the opposite thing is going to happen. And don't get me wrong, you're going to get the negative, like, quote unquote, realist that are like, well, blah, blah, blah. And you just kind of have to be like, well, this is what I'm doing. Like, watch me.
Yeah.
Like, watch me. I think for me, it was easier this time around because I already wrote a book. So, like, if people are like, oh, you're writing a book? Like, yeah, I already wrote one, motherfucker. Like, this is my second one. I don't know. I just think people are happy when you're doing stuff. Mm-hmm. They like it.
As long as you still get your stuff done. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like I'm, like, working on my script at work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't sit around, like, and my job is very much, and all the jobs I've ever had are very much like what you do in your free time. It's like your business. Like, you want to be a professional baker. You can be a baker, you know? Like, you're not at work doing that. They don't control what you do at 7 p.m.
All right. Any other advice for aspiring authors?
Ooh, for authors? Yeah, just do it. Just do it. I talked to so many authors who are thinking about doing it and want to do it and might do it. Just do it, man. Just write a book. It is that easy. You don't have to have a publisher. You don't have to have an agent. You don't have to decide whether or not you want to self-publish or traditionally publish or get an agent or get a publisher. You got to write a book first. You just sit down. The way you write a book is you sit down and you write a book. So just, yeah, just do it.
6 months?
I've seen people do it in less. I did it in way more. I think it took me like 2-3 years to write my first book because I was casually writing it as like a hobby. I had a full-time day job. I was writing it as a hobby. I've seen people who have been committed to it write it in like 4 months. That's hard if you have like some sort of day job. It doesn't matter. That's the point. It could take you 10 years to finish it. It doesn't matter so long as you're sitting down and you're working on it.
But just do it. It goes back to the big dreams thing.
Like, and so Nike, many people just sit, do it. Just do it.
People sit on it and don't do it.
Yeah, I think people are really afraid. I think people are afraid of making art public because I think they're afraid of a few things. They're afraid they're going to be judged. Like, what if I do it, then it's out there and maybe it's not good enough. You know, I think people are like, it's easier to be like, well, I really want to write a book. But once you write a book, people are going to read it. And I think people are afraid that people are going to read it and be like, this is crap. Like, who cares? So what if it's crap? It's your first book. Like, that's fine. Everybody's first book is crap. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter. But I think that's most people's fear is like, I'm going to write something that's like crappy.
And it seems like you don't even really need to be a quote unquote writer. Like it's really like, I mean, you need to write, but you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I think in the last 2 or 3 years, I feel like I've dramatically improved my writing skills and they used to be terrible. I think it's just through like the practice of writing, whether that's, you know, online communication, things like that, where I feel like I'm proficient enough that I feel like I could write a book. 6, 7, 8 years ago, I'd be like, oh no. Like, but you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't, I think just committing to it and doing it, I feel like you don't need to be labeled a writer from like day one growing up, so to speak.
Oh, totally. I have a degree in international politics. I never thought I'd be a writer. I had no desire to be a writer. My first job out of college, I was still thinking about becoming a politician. I wanted to become a politician. Because I found out because I just love words and I love speaking. Like, I just wanted a job where I could go around and speak and be admired. And then I realized, like, politics actually sucks. I don't really want to do that. But I had no intention of being a writer. And I didn't think I was even, like, a great storyteller. I never thought I was funny. And then one day I had a colleague, my first job out of college, she was like, you're really funny. And I was like, I am? She's like, yeah, you're hilarious. Like, you should write this stuff down. And I was like, I should? And that's what started out very casually. And I think my writing was shit. It was total shit. Even this book, the first draft was shit. And then you have an editor who tells you, like, this chapter's 40 pages and it should be 20 pages. And you're like, yeah, you're right. I rambled on here. And you're totally right. You learn. Somebody edits it and you learn and you're like, oh, I don't know how to do dialogue well. How can I do dialogue better? And your brain's like, oh, maybe if you make it shorter and maybe if you make it more descriptive. Oh, funny side tangent, can I?
Yeah.
Okay, there's a very strong phrase for writers called show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all writers know this phrase, show, don't tell. It basically means, like, don't say what's happening, describe it. So instead of being like, it's cold outside, you'd be like, David wrapped his blanket around his shivering body, something like that, right? I'm in the middle of editing the second draft of my second book, and I get the feedback, show, don't tell, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck that means. And I get on YouTube, I've already written a book. I get on YouTube, I'm sitting there, I already have an agent, I already have a publisher, and I'm like, what does show, don't tell mean? And I swear to you, I watched like a 10-minute YouTube video on it. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
And then
and then I did it. But you know what I mean? Like, to your point, like, do you have to like be a titled writer? Like, no. Does your grammar have to be great? No. You just write it. And then somebody's like, show, don't tell. You get on the internet. You look it up. And you figure it out.
Boom.
Now I'm showing, don't telling like a mofo. I'm kidding. I still tell a lot. It's kind of my style, but
love your style.
Thanks.
All right. Well, anything else? I feel like we covered a lot here.
No. You know me, I could ramble on all night, so we'll just call it. Let's call it, because otherwise it'll be like 3 a.m. And I'll be like, well, actually, children, let me tell you a story. Thanks for having me.
And please let listeners know how they can follow up and support.
Yeah, you can find me on the interwebs at olivepersimmon.com. From there, you can find all of my socials, Olive Persimmon on Instagram, Olive B. Persimmon on Facebook, and Twitter, I forget to use, so don't look on Twitter.
Books still for sale?
Books still for sale. You can find it in Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. I would make way more money on the audiobook, so buy the audiobook. It's called The Coitus Chronicles.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Olive.
Thank you.
Hey, friend. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Wanted to also let you know about my monthly newsletter called One Email Away, where I fundamentally believe that we are all one email away from new opportunities. And if there's a way that I could potentially help you to connect with other people, I would love to do that. So One Email Away, you can sign up for my newsletter on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. You can also see the One Email Away section. But just want to take this moment to say thank you for listening to this episode. Really excited for us to build and grow our portfolio careers together.